The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and I'm once again joined in the studio by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. It's a change of format for us this week as two Southern Counties East League teams, Canterbury City and Cray Valley, go head-to-head in a two-legged FA VAR semi-final for a place at Wembley. Steve and I have been on the road to both clubs, so we'll hear from both managers shortly, as well as from the league chairman, Denise Richmond. We'll kick things off with Cray Valley, and I started by asking their manager, Kevin Watson, if Cray's pursuit of the league title has benefited his team since they got through to the semi-final.
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand. I'd like to think the cup journey has a positive effect on the league because it keeps buoyancy. The fact that we're not top of the league and we've got a lot to do to try and get promoted and we're chasing people and things like that, I think it just keeps people on their toes and the buoyancy around the club and things like that. I think they go hand in hand. They have a positive effect on each other.
Is there a danger that you could have taken your eye off the league in this time as well? Is it something you spoke about as a group as well?
Not really, because the focus has always been on the league. The cups, they're a bonus, if you like, and you probably don't think about any earlier rounds, but as it gets closer and closer. We don't talk about it too much, to be honest. It's hard to ignore, I think, from a player's perspective, look around they're in, and it's been like that for probably the last sort of two games in the competition, getting closer and closer. But I maintain they're a good bunch of lads. I think they're level-headed. I always say when we bring in players, it's as much about personality as ability. I've made clear to them that the focus is the league. That's what we're judged on as a group. But the cup's a tremendous opportunity, once in a lifetime to a certain extent for many of them. So it's something that we'll embrace.
At which point on the VARs run did you start to think a little bit further ahead and think that, well, maybe hold on a minute, we've got a bit of a chance here?
Probably the round before the quarterfinals, if like, I'm not sure what stage that.
Fifth round.
What was this? Over 650 teams in the competition and things like that. But look, expectations high at this club. I'm fully aware of that. I'm under pressure every game. I don't think many managers are at many levels, but I knew that when I come into the club, and it's something I'm willing to take on. Life's too short, isn't it? You might as well put yourself under pressure if you're going to turn up and do it. And the boys under pressure, I don't think people realise how difficult it is to win. We're expected to win every game, whoever we're playing. Even in the FA Cup, when we had a decent run, the best run that the clubs had, we're still expected to win games. And every defeat we have is it's almost like a travesty for people. But it's hard to win football games at any level. You look, other than probably Cray Wanderers, and maybe in the Premiership, our record's very good. We've lost four league games. We've lost a couple of cup games throughout the season. But if you look at the amount of games that we've ended up playing, and our win ratio is good.
It's one of the things, I guess, when the VARs gets to the later rounds, that the teams that are in there, you talk about you've lost four games, but the team that you went and played before had only lost once or twice, hadn't they?
Yeah, they hadn't lost at home. They was a very good team, I stand by that. They would do extremely well in this league, and this is a very strong league for the level. We had to be very good on the day, and I thought we were, especially as the conditions. You're thinking to yourself, maybe in the latter rounds you're going to go and play on some really nice surfaces at some really nice grounds, and we ended up on a worse surface than our home pitch, which we moan about constantly. Absolutely. Look, they're big teams left in the competition. We've obviously got Canterbury. It's great for the league and things like that to have two teams in the competition.
Did you want to draw Canterbury? I mean, how could you look at it at the last four?
I honestly didn't. I've been asked that question a lot of times. Who would you prefer to draw? I don't know. There's pros and cons. I think possibly one of the benefits of playing Willand in the last round is they wouldn't have known too much about us. They came to watch us twice, I think. We was poor in both games. So we've gone, I think Canterbury know we're a good team. We know Canterbury are a good team. I'll probably let you know after the second game whether it was a good draw or not. People say, but it's nice that one team will get through. It won't be for the team that doesn't win, will it? It'll be heartbreak, and that's no disrespect to Canterbury. They will feel the same. It won't be any easier to take the fact that you're playing a team in your league and you see a Kent team going through. For the management and everyone involved in the club and the players, whoever you're playing, it will be heartbreak if you don't get through, and sort of excitement, adulation if you do get through.
You've been impressed by Canterbury's run to get this far?
Yeah, I went to watch the game, their quarter final, only because it was on the Sunday, and there's a chance we could have had one of those two teams and the team they was playing if I hadn't have had a chance to go and watch them, and we had a draw on them, so I went to watch that. They'd signed quite a few players before that round, so they're quite a different team. I absolutely league position doesn't come into it at all. Like you say, there was teams in the competition that are flying and winning their leagues easy and then lost to teams in a lower ranked position in their league. So it's absolutely a 50-50 game. It's a cup game. Possibly if they had the squad they had now at the beginning of the season, that they may have been in a stronger position, but they're still in a healthy position in the league. We're not winning the league, are we? So we can't. There's still teams better than us in the league over the course of the season so far. So it will be interesting. I went to watch them the other day against the FC Croydon. Again, their personnel changed. I like to do that. I like to go and watch teams and find out as much as possible. So I've got a clear conscience. I feel uncomfortable with in the FA Cup and FA Vars. I don't do all I can. But look, we'll have to see, but they will know quite a lot about us. They've seen us a couple of times recently. We've seen them a couple of times. It's interesting over the two legs. That's something as a manager I think is a nice challenge for me. How do you play a team over two legs? What happens in the second game, etc. I sincerely don't think the game will be finished after the first leg, almost no matter what the score for us or for them. I don't feel there's a home advantage on the Sunday. I don't feel that. Our away record is probably better than our home record. They've got a better surface. I feel better surfaces suit us, but it might suit them as well.
You're the favourites on paper, at least, I guess. Do you see it that way? Or
no, is it? I honestly think it's 50-50. Anybody that thinks, and people will feel that I'm saying that as a precaution, but it's generally not the case. I feel that it's 50-50 whoever goes through. I wouldn't put my hard-earned money on us or them, to be honest. I don't think you could call it. And anybody that feels they can, sometimes when you see they do in our league, they do these predictions prior to every sort of game, this sort of Instagram poll or whatever it is. And it's ridiculous sometimes where you see a team's 85 or 90% in favour of winning on that poll. And everybody's got a right to their opinion, and obviously they're choosing one way or the other. But I don't see it like that, and I doubt Ben at Canterbury sees it like that either.
Come on to talk about some of your players in a moment, but yourself personally, Kevin, you was at Chatham before as a manager.
Yeah.
You talk about the pressure that you get here at Cray Valley. Why did you drop down to this level of football? Because obviously Chatham was an Isthmian League club at the time when you were managing, and you know you had some successful times there as well.
Yeah, we did have some successful times, and I had some extremely good players. Different setup. The aspiration and expectation wasn't anywhere near it. The way it is here, I spent four seasons or so managing them. I just felt we was at sort of a crossroads where maybe I needed a change and they needed a change. I wouldn't say I was under a huge amount of pressure, and I took a little while out of the game to reassess things like family life and things like that. Try sort of assisting other people for a little while and things like that. To be honest, that didn't suit me, and it's not something that I feel I think that's a hard position to take up, and obviously Tommy Osborne's my assistant here and Kevin James is a first team coach, and I think they do a great job, because as a manager it's very difficult to find people that you trust, and when you're not there will run things the way to the level of your expectation and that way. But I came here, it wasn't so much about the level, I'll be honest, there's an element of convenience. I work relatively local in terms of, but it's as much if not more commitment. I'm speaking to players a lot, my players and prospective players for earlier in the season to sign and things like that. You have to do all sort of the mundane jobs like balls and bibs and make sure kit's there and financial aspects, so there's a lot goes into it. But I think for me, I've always stuck by my motive. It's not because I've got aspirations of managing a lot higher or anything like that. I've got a busy job which I'm quite satisfies my need from a work perspective, so I've got no aspirations to go and manage full time and bits and pieces like that. My pure motivation to come into management, which all the players know, is to try and create an environment and opportunity where people enjoy themselves and embrace themselves. And you're going to speak about some of the players, but all the players' motives of being here for different reasons, and many of them could and have offers to play higher, but I think they recognise that it's not about me, and I do try and create that environment, and it's not about Tom or Kev, and it's somewhere where they can either develop or ultimately enjoy themselves.
I was going to talk about developing players. Do you get that satisfaction out of seeing some players develop? Some people that you're bringing to the club, obviously people like Lisby and Tomlin up top, they're not players necessarily you would be able to develop their game in that sense, but the younger players within your group, do you see a progress amongst them?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I've had a couple of players like at Chatham have gone on to big and better things. Eddie Youssef went to Dagenham, Redbridge, Alfie May, not straight from Chatham, but obviously went on and has done quite well for himself. So there's that aspect that gives you satisfaction. But you mentioned the older, more senior players that are possibly in the latter years of their career. I get as much enjoyment because it's possibly something that they didn't see coming, and it means as much to them as it does the younger players. Maybe even more so because they know that they're not. I think the younger players, and I was certainly the same when I was younger, you think these opportunities will come around again and again, and there's a bit of naivety there, and it's not their fault. I absolutely understand that, and it's our job to explain to them and get the message across. It doesn't always work like that. You don't know when your next big opportunity is going to be, and I think some of the older players know that, hold on, this could be a big moment in my career. But I just want them as a group of players, I think they deserve to, and I think they've got the quality to create a moment which they're still talking about in a pub in 20 or 30 years' time, telling their grandchildren about. They can read on Google or whatever and find out about it. And also their families, because there's a lot of sacrifice. They go and work, these lads, and then they turn up on a cold evening at Bearsted on Tuesday night, or where there's not many people watching, or at a home game where there's not many people watching, but also people to do with the club, volunteers, the committee, who all work selflessly for the good of the club. It's just to bring moments to those people, really, where they look back and go, do you know what, that year for Cray Valley, I remember that, and it was a good part of the journey and our lives and things like that.
Talk about Kevin Lisby up front, first of all. I'll talk about your defence afterwards, but in terms of the figurehead of your attack, are you surprised you've got him still playing at this level?
Not really. I think when I spoke to him about signing, it was ironically quite considerable time before he did actually sign. And what I needed at that stage as much as anything is people around me that I could trust. And something about him which people will admire is he's always worked hard in his career for what he's had. He's never been handed anything. So that work ethic. If you have people around you, like out there, there's absolutely no arrogance about the way he plays. He's had an extremely successful career. Turns up, doesn't complain about anything. So I knew I was signing that as a personality. I had no doubt that he would be effective. Yes, he's done extremely well. I'm pleased it's lasted as long as it has. And we always had this agreement, a very honest agreement, where if it wasn't working for either person, we wouldn't fall out about it. We'd shake hands. We speak about it because obviously, like, it is quite difficult physically at that age, but he keeps himself in very good condition.
Is that why he doesn't play every week, every game for you? He plays sort of almost every week, doesn't he?
But yeah, it's just about maintenance. It's a reality. He's 40 years of age. It's a reality. It's not because he doesn't want to. He has played midweek games, and he's played a lot of games this season. And when I spoke to him about that, ironically, only last week, he's happy with the amount of games he's played. But a lot of effort goes into enabling him to play that amount of games. He has to condition himself in a different way to what he did in his 20s or his early 30s. But he's willing to do that because he sees the rewards. And what's nice for him, I feel, is his boys are of an age where they're involved in football and playing at a good level. And he's coaching them and teaching them and guiding them. And he's able to still do things that he's asking them to do. And I think that's important for a lot of people's families. I go back to it, that families can be involved and these players can make their wives, girlfriends, parents, children proud of them, really.
At the other end of the pitch, by contrast, Andy Walker, another older timer, shall we say, but someone who seems to be getting better almost with age. That experience just really helps. And as much as your attacking prowess gets a lot of attention, in fact, your success has probably been based as much on your defence as anything else, hasn't it?
Yeah, look, that's why he's the captain. I played with him at Maidstone. He's a good friend of mine. I tried to sign him. He was at another club, a higher level, relatively comfortable, and he's chosen to come down. Probably a bit of a gamble in his mouth, but we know each other, and he knows I'm a man of my word, and I always say if players come down and experience it, that they'll like it. Absolutely loves it. But what a great guy, like, plays every game. He's got a couple of knocks at the moment, but he's first and foremost, he's a great guy. And yes, he can still do it on the pitch, absolutely. And he's very committed. And like I say, look, no hesitation in him being the captain.
You got the two games now against Canterbury. What's the last thing you're going to say to your players before they go out?
No, I think it's just along the lines of you've earned an opportunity just to embrace it and have no regrets. I know that sounds like a cliche, but I don't want people after the first game, after the two legs coming off and living with any regret. If we can have a clear conscience regardless of what result, that's all I ask, really. I'd like us to perform. Yes, it's a results game, but I do like to judge performance as well. I don't want people to be nervous, which is easier said than done. They will be nervous. There'll be some anxiety, but just to channel that and just to stick together, really. They like playing with each other. We never too high, never too low. We wasn't go mad in the changing room. We don't do that. Maybe in the cup, maybe the last round we did, but yeah, just no regrets. Give as much as they can, and whatever their personal motivation is, which people will have different motivations in their life to use that and channel that and make people proud. It's not about doing it for me, it's about doing it for other people, whether it's people involved in a club, whether it's their families.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast, FA VAR Special.
Steve, we've both known Kevin for a number of years. I've got to say that was a really interesting interview with him, quite open, I thought, as well. Good insight. Interesting, the preparation that they've been going through and how he likes to go and do his homework on teams. So, you know, almost no stone left unturned.
No, absolutely. You know, going into real depth, doing his homework down at that level, as much as managers would higher up the pyramid. And interesting as well, he was saying that since he's gone in there, there's been the expectation, maybe from outside or with inside the club as well, that they've got to win every week. Whoever they're playing, home and away, the expectation is that they win, win, win. So they're quite used to this type of pressure, being the favourites in a tie like this, used to this type of situation, because it's something the players have to deal with every week. And also, he mentioned the likes of Kevin Lisby and Andy Walker, a couple of the elder statesmen of the squad, obviously bring plenty of quality on the pitch, but also because they understand that this is their last chance to do something really significant in their career. I'm sure they'll be drumming that into the other players as well to make sure that nobody lets this moment pass them by.
So that's one half of the tie. Now let's hear from Canterbury. Steve, you went to catch up with City boss Ben Smith and started by asking him how everyone was feeling with the semi-final getting ever closer.
Excited. In the previous rounds, it's probably been a bit of nerves there. But we're clear underdogs, so there's no nerves from us at all. We go in there, you know, really, really excited and can't wait for the games, really, and see what they have in store for us.
It's fair to say you haven't really been pulling up any trees in the league this season. So how have you done this in the Vars?
I think on paper we've got a much better side squad than what we've sort of been showing in the league. We've been really inconsistent and we've had games where, you know, we've battered teams and come off and lost it. You know, and really, you know, I can come up with excuses as to why, but we've not been consistent enough. And, you know, really, that's mine and my management team's, you know, that's on us, really, to get more out of the players on a regular basis, because we've shown in the one-off games we can be as good as anyone. And I say player for player in our league, you know, we've got as many Ryman and above appearances as anyone else, really.
Tell us about the squad then, the players and also the characters that you've got.
We've got a mixture of experience and youth in there. You've got someone like Kyron Lightfoot that, you know, he's what 20 and sort of trying to make a name for himself at this level, lots of ability. And then you go the other end, you've got someone like Jack Dilo that, you know, has spoke about retirement this season. Although I think he might be retracting that now after the way our season's finished. You've got, you know, good characters. You've seen Bola Duadu with his singing antics in the dressing room, which has had, you know, has been a real big impact on us. You know, and those few of the players we've got in, you know, they've come in over the last couple of months. So we talk about the inconsistencies in the league. Had we had the squad we've got now earlier on in the season, would we be in a much better position? You know, the big question marks, really, that will remain unanswered until next season.
The vibe, as it were, that you've got in the changing room, that mix of characters and the right blend of people, how important is that in terms of what happens when you go out on the pitch?
Oh, yeah, it's really important. You know, before the last Vars game, our dressing room was so relaxed. You know, and I'm one that, you know, I get, you know, real bad nerves before any game. Even when it was back when I played, you know, I'd be, you know, throwing up in the toilets. That's just that nervous adrenaline feeling that I've always had. It's, you know, really weird and hard to shake. And as a manager, it's actually 10 times worse. But when you go in there, when we've gone in for those Vars games, everyone's just been, you know, seems so calm, so relaxed, so ready for it. It's kind of like it's been meant to be each round. Which is a weird feeling, because in the league it's not, we've had to fight for everything in the league and things have still not gone our way. Whereas the Vars, it's kind of like we feel the journey shouldn't be ending each time we play. Whether we have that same feeling in this semi-final, whether that feeling gets us through or not, that's a different question, because we're coming up a formidable opposition.
You started this Vars run all the way back in September now, 8 wins later. Here you are. What moments along the way particularly stand out, or, you know, were pivotal for you, do you think?
It's very, very simple. Corinthian away. They're obviously flying a lot, flying in our league, doing really well this year. You know, got a lot of respect for that club. We were 2-0 down at half time. Team talk at half time, how are we going to change things round? You know, there were a few choice words given. We've gone out for second half. First minute, Liam Quinn sent off. You know, real leader of our side gets sent off unjustly, in my opinion. And that's our team talk out the window. So it's kind of like, well, where do we go from here? And from somewhere, we end up coming back, making it 2-2 in normal time, go to extra time, and we score 2 goals in the last minute. Rob Lawrence come on as a sub in that game. Scored two cracking goals in the last minute, and it just, yeah, the atmosphere in our dressing room after that. I mean, we nearly took the pavilion down, the old pavilion down at Corinthian there. It was you know, amazing. It was such a great feeling, and it's kind of like we've had that in the back of our minds every round that we were out, and yet.
Because you had to come from behind in quarter final against Biggleswade. A day like that at Corinthian, is that something you draw on at times like that?
No, definitely. We know we can do that, and we've brought players in as we've gone this year, and we've got real good experience in there and good characters. Biggleswade, yeah, they went 1-0 up, and we did look a bit nervy actually on the pitch, but we rode the storm. The first 20 minutes, we rode the storm, and you know, thankfully, they didn't get a second goal. And then from then on, they didn't look that threatening to us. And as soon as we scored the goal, we didn't struggle in the game, which is strange, especially because they had a lot of possession in the game as well. We just didn't feel like that was our time to go out. And it's felt like that every round. It's like we don't feel like it's there for us to go at that stage. And hopefully, we turn up on the semi-final and we have that same feeling, because that gets an extra 10% out of the players.
How do you feel about this tie then? Cray Valley, it's a little bit different playing them over two legs, going to their place first and then coming back here for the second leg. How do you feel about them as opposition?
Well, firstly, it's strange. I've never been involved in a two-legged sort of cup tie, so that's going to be something new. You were always, as a player or as a manager, as a coach, you're always trying to, gain knowledge from these experiences. So firstly, it's going to be a great experience. I would have probably preferred not to play Cray Valley for two reasons. One, they're in our league. The special, feeling of the FA Vars is that you play sides that you've never come across before. We want to play a club that our football club, Canterbury City Football Club, have never played. It's real good adventure. So to get Cray Valley, who no disrespect to Cray Valley, but in the grand scheme of things, they're not a massive club. I've got a lot of respect for them. They've come through the county leagues, with Canterbury City. It's kind of over the last 10 years, sort of mirrored each other really in the achievements. So I've got a lot of respect for the people in their committee, etc., that have done a fantastic job in moving that club forward. But they're not Northwich Victoria. They're not your West Auckland's. Footballing wise, I personally think they're the favourites for the competition. So I'd put them ahead of Northwich Victorias. But, experiencing a new ground, having an away day, that would have been, I think, probably our preferred option. And as I say, the second part is obviously they're a fantastic side. We've played them this season already. We know what to expect. I know about them inside out. But that's not to say that knowing about them is going to be good enough to beat them, because they're one of the best sides I've seen at this level.
So what are Cray Valley's strengths, and on the flip side, where can you hurt them?
They are a total football side. They've got obviously real good experience. Everyone will talk about Kevin Lisby, but he isn't a one-man show. Really not a one-man show. They play great football through the middle. They're energetic. They've got pace up top. And they've got that star quality inside that they don't need five chances to hurt you. And with us, on our day, we might not need five chances. But we're going to need to play up our skin in both legs to give ourselves a chance.
It's said that in these two-legged ties, you can't win it in the first leg, but you can lose it. How important is it to still be in the tie going into the second leg?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for our club, we set little targets. Each round, it's been, round after round, we've not looked too far ahead of ourselves. We're not overlooking opposition. And, we won't do that with Cray. If we can get Cray back here and we're in the tie still, the biggest thing for our club, we'll get a massive great gate here, and that will help our club to survive. We'll get, good money through the door, and, the club will have another huge day, huge occasion with publicity on us. Obviously, if we can stay in the tie and we're here, then, we might start thinking we could nick it and get ourselves there. But first things first, we take one game at a time. We're probably going to take it 30 minutes at a time. It's 180 minutes. So we can get through the first 30 minutes and we're in the game, we'll tick that box. and we'll work from there. Whereas for them, they'll expect to be up against us. You know, they are heavy favourites. You know, with the squads, you know, and probably the budget, etc. They've got, you know, I don't know anyone that will put us as, you know, as favourites to go through. So, you know, pressure's on them, but then they've got huge experience on their side that shouldn't mean a lot to them anyway, the pressure.
And now we're recording this interview in the clubhouse at Faversham Town FC, which is where you're playing this season, because Canterbury City are homeless and have been for a few years. You mentioned keeping the club going. You know, it is a critical stage in the club's history, isn't it? We're not just talking about this Vars run and whether you can win a game or not, but the bigger picture is there's a lot at stake.
Oh, of course. You know, we've got people involved with the club that have been here for, you know, for what, you know, the chairman's taken over, he's been here for 10 years. The vice chairman has been here for 20 years. So these people, they're not going to continue to stick around, because, you know, it's kind of like a life's work to try and get this club back, you know, back where it belongs. You know, these people shouldn't have to be fighting as hard as they are and doing, you know, these years of service with little reward, really, because the football club does an amazing job in the local community. The fact that we do all the things we do with the disability, the youth football, the ladies football, we can do that. We've done homeless football. We can do that in the local community without our own home. What can we do with a home? You know, so it is crucial now, because, you know, sooner or later, people will give up. They'll give up hope, and they're not going to put their hand in the pocket to pay for a ground share with another club. You know, it's not, you know, hundreds of quid. It's a lot,
it's
lot
tough,
more.
It's tough, isn't it, doing this year on year?
Oh, absolutely. It's really draining. And, you know, we've had in the past, since I've been here, we've been at Ashford. So back end of Ashford, it was, you know, difficult getting over there and getting players to go and sign to play there. Then you go in, we're down at Deal. Wonderful people at Deal, wonderful, you know, facilities there were brilliant, really friendly atmosphere, lovely football club. But again, who wants to travel down to Deal? No disrespect, you know, trying to sign a player from Maidstone, who wants to travel, you know, even from Canterbury-based players didn't want to travel down to Deal. And now we're at Faversham, which has been fantastic for us. It's been really good, to be fair. People here have been amazing. We train here at the club. You know, we've got our own kit room. It feels like a home.
Yeah,
it's not a home, but it feels a lot more like it. And the players can sense that as well. So hopefully this can put a lot more pressure on the council to help us. You know, we've had no support for a number of years now. So 20 years without a ground. They took £14 million. With a promise that they'd find us a home. They've not done that yet. And, you know, it's about time that, the football club's put back on the agenda.
Now, you're the manager here, but I think it's fair to say you're a lot more than just a football manager. What do you put into the club in terms of your time and the various roles that you carry out?
Well, I think any manager will tell you you don't turn up at 1:30 on a Saturday or at training and that's it. It's hours upon hours of, you know, researching opposition. It's, you know, speaking to players on the phone, speaking to other management, you know, trying to learn yourself as you're going, doing the kit. We don't have a kit man here, so we're doing that. It's a case of I might have to organise getting a training venue if the pitch is waterlogged. You know, there's no one here that does that. It's me that will have to ring around and try and do that. You know, at one point I was the bus driver. You know, it's not what some of these non-league clubs at our level and the level above, you know, have been with, you know, 20 people on a committee, etc. Just doesn't have that. You know, there's a few people that work, you know, very hard to keep this club going. You know, and at times it's, you know, financials. You know, it may be that we need to buy extra warm-up tops. You know, and I'm the one that will do that. Whether it's match balls, you know, whatever it may be. I mean, especially when we're at Deal, we went through over 60 match balls in a season because the local residents wouldn't give the balls back. You know, I couldn't put that strain back on the club because I knew the club couldn't afford it. So it was me that was then going out and getting the match balls in. So it's been difficult. But we've got good people here that, you know, that crack on and you know, I know we're talking about it now, but we don't moan about it. We, you know, we embrace the challenge, and it won't always be like that. Where, you know, whether it's at Canterbury City or, you know, 15 years time at another club, it won't always be like that. And to have managed and got by with it how it is now, you know, it fills me with confidence going forward.
So why do you do it? Why does grassroots football mean so much to you?
Well, I think if you're not going to make it in a professional game, then and you've got that real drive and desire to be involved in football locally, then your local club has got, it's got to be the pinnacle, surely. You know, somewhere like Sittingbourne or your Hives, I'd have no affinity to those type of clubs at all. I'd have no interest in doing anything at those clubs. And that's no disrespect to those clubs or clubs like them in those different areas, but just, you know, there wouldn't be that real desire to want them to succeed. You know, Canterbury, I played for as a youth team player way back when. I played in the first team here when they reformed. You know, so it's a club I've got real, you know, affinity with. I'm born in Canterbury. You know, I'd love to be the manager that, you know, leads the club out in the new stadium. Whether I could do a Jay Saunders and take the club on further, you know, that's a test for me further down the line. You know, and if I'm not up to that challenge, then, you know, I'll be the first person to step aside and stay involved in the club and help move the club forward again. Because it's not about me. You know, in 80 years' time, it'd be nice people go look at the legacy that was built there. But if that's not my legacy, then hopefully it'll be someone else's.
And just a final one, back to the short term. Only two men have led out Kent teams at Wembley for an FA Vars final. What would it mean to be the third?
Oh, it's a pinch. I've said it earlier, you know, a pinch me moment, really, wouldn't it be? Even if we did the unthinkable and got there, you know, I still, even up to the day, I probably still wouldn't believe it was happening. But it's, again, we talk about, you know, those managers led the sides out. They had backroom teams there as well that I'm sure were very strong. And, you know, I've got a really, really good backroom team behind me. And it's not me, you know, delivering this and driving it forward. Yes, I'm obviously, my name's on the manager's position here, but we've got Ben Brown, Tim Dixon, assistants, Will Graham's first team coach, Ada Gow has been here a long time as goalkeeping coach, you know, Mick West as physio. So we've got a lot of people that put a lot of effort in. It's not just me. It's a, you know, a team of people that do it voluntarily to try and push the club forward.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast, FA VAR Special.
Great stuff there from Ben Smith, the Canterbury manager. How did you find the mood down at Canterbury, Steve, on your trip there?
Really relaxed, actually. I had the chance to obviously speak to Ben, Chairman Tim Clark as well, and several of the players. People are going to be involved this coming weekend. And they're all really calm, relishing the tie, the chance to be involved in something like this. But, yeah, very relaxed. I think that's probably partly due to the fact that they are underdogs, that there isn't the pressure on them maybe that there is on Cray Valley. And also because this Vars run's really brought Canterbury's season to life. They've never been in contention in the league, but they've managed to get it together on these one-off cup ties. It's built momentum, brought a real good feeling around the club and put them on the map as well within their own city with the council and with people around Kent and beyond as well. Maybe didn't know that Canterbury City even existed. Canterbury even had a football club. And as Ben Smith was saying, that game at Corinthian in the second round, the way they were able to turn that around in adversity, it's given them huge belief that they can take on anyone in the Vars and even go all the way now.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, Cray Valley on paper, as we've, you know, alluded to with both managers, are the favourites in our eyes, certainly just by going by the league positions. But you say the fact that Canterbury have been to Corinthian and won already in the Vars, you know, Corinthian are top of the league as things stand. So in that way, Cray Valley, I guess, hold no fear for them.
No, it's just it's another difficult game for them. They've been up against some tough opposition. They've won a lot of games by the odd goal on this run, and it's such a, you know, fantastic achievement for both clubs to get to the semi-finals, and for Canterbury certainly would have surpassed any expectations they had at the start of the season. So in some ways they probably feel like they've won already by getting this far, and now they can just go and have a real crack at this semi.
We've heard from both teams then. Now it's the turn of the Southern Counties East League. I called up with their chairman, Denise Richmond, and started by asking how big an achievement it must be for the league to have two teams in the last four of the FA Vars.
I think it's an incredible achievement, and it's a credit to our clubs, I think, and the strength of our league. We actually do really well in national competitions. We play well against the teams around us, Combined Counties, Southern Combination League, Essex Senior League, Spartan South Midlands. We've always done well against them. So I think this year seems to be the proof in that, that we've actually got two this far in the competition.
You saw both quarterfinals as well. Cray Valley obviously went west and a long way and a long journey, but they got their win. And then Canterbury the following day on Sunday at the at Faversham's ground. What was your assessment of both games, and did they deserve to go through?
So I think Cray Valley definitely, but Cray Valley and Canterbury both deserved to win their games on the overall 90 minutes. I think there was a bit of edginess in both sides at the start. Certainly Cray Valley competed really strongly, but Willand Rovers were a very strong side. And they were just after the second half, I think they were 1-1 and a penalty was awarded. Willand Rovers obviously disputed whether that was a soft penalty was the word I heard to describe it. But I believe two hands on somebody's chest and a push in the penalty area is a penalty, however soft it might look when you're on the other side of the pitch. And then they went on just in the final minutes to score another goal. Canterbury, on the other hand, seemed to be very much under pressure in their first half. They were 1-0 down, and just before the second, just before the end of the first half, scored a spectacular goal from well towards the halfway line that chipped the goalkeeper from nothing really, and probably against the run of play. Scoring again immediately after the half time, I think, is probably what pushed down Biggles Wade a little bit, although they never gave up. But Canterbury fought hard and a well deserved win in the end.
Cast your mind back then to both teams are in the hat for the semi-final. From a league perspective, are you hoping that the teams avoid each other, or were you hoping that they drew each other so you were guaranteed a Southern Counties East team at Wembley?
I ebbed and flowed. One minute I wanted them to not draw each other, the next minute I wanted them to draw each other. I think realistically it's probably the best outcome as a league that we could expect and hope for, because at this point we do actually, we are guaranteed a club in the final of the FA Vars for the third time in our league's history, I think. And therefore we will have I will go to Wembley with a club to support. I think we could have finished up with nothing. We could have had an All Kent final and both teams playing each other. But I think Chertsey and Northwich Victoria are very strong sides. So there's no guarantee of anything when you get to a semi-final, and particularly over two legs, because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you mentioned the unpredictability over the two legs. I mean, obviously on paper, you look at the league table, Cray Valley are third, trying to claim the title as well still, with an outside chance of doing that if they could win all their games and put the pressure on Quinfian. Canterbury mid-table haven't really threatened with the top six all season, so looking in from the outside, you suggest that Cray Valley are the big favourites?
You would assume so, and on paper, and that's the only way you can sort of judge it at this stage, is definitely the positions you mentioned mean that Cray Valley are the stronger side. They're winning their games. I think Canterbury have struggled with some injuries during the last probably 3 months. I think they had a couple of serious injuries 2 to 3 weeks ago, where players are out for the season. What they have done is covered themselves. They've brought in additional players and made sure they've hit their signing on deadline date, so they have got cover for that. But I think it probably told, actually, in the quarterfinal vars, they had two players playing in that game for the first time with the team. So it doesn't matter, I suppose, how much you train with a team, and they were only signed in probably the previous 2 weeks, you wouldn't have trained that much, then to play together for the first time is not always easy. That may well have moved on by the time they get to the semi-finals, and will improve game on game that they all play with each other, I should imagine. So probably why Canterbury struggled a bit. So, but on paper, you would definitely think Cray Valley.
And I guess as well, the great thing about the semi-finals, it's two legs. So, you know, there could be an error in the first game that, you know, if it was just a one-off game, that could prove crucial. Now you've got a second game, really, you know, if you're behind in the, from the first leg, to redeem yourself. But at the same time, having two games between two scaffold teams does give you the opportunity to showcase the league even more.
It does. And I think the good thing about one of the legs, it's actually on a Sunday afternoon. I think that that will get a lot of third party spectators. I know that when we were at the Canterbury game, a lot of the Hythe and Folkestone people said they would be coming up to watch the game. We also, when I was at the Willand Rovers game, I know the chairman of the Western League through the 5-6 activity that I do with the FA, and he has a sister that actually lives in Gillingham, so he's making the effort to come up and watch one of those games too, even though we beat aside from his league. So I think there'll be a lot more people coming up. And Saturday, Sunday afternoon, it's a spectacular occasion and event for local football, and I think Sunday and then the following Saturday will create that interest. With the two legs, I remember when Tunbridge Wells played in the semi-final, they were 2-0 up in the first leg, and we the chairman then of the Northern League had come down to watch, and I remember him saying to Douglas that they'd win the second leg, and Douglas obviously at that time said, yep, you will, 1-0. So it means that on average, unfortunately, that didn't happen. They were actually 2-0 in front, which made it all equal. And I think it was quite in the last minutes of the game that Tunbridge Wells actually scored a goal and brought it back. So there's heartbreak and joy, and it ebbs between all of it in two games, I think, because you can go away from the first leg and think, yeah, it's great, or no, it's not. And you do have opportunity to redeem yourself, but you've got to be consistent in trying to redeem that.
And as chairman as well, you're going to have the different emotions on the day, I guess, that you can't really celebrate one team getting to Wembley and maybe you've got another one of your teams not going to Wembley, and the disappointment as well. So you're going to have to try to be impartial but happy for whoever does actually get to the arch in the end.
The one thing I love about the FA competitions is generally I can go to a game and support a team. Week in, week out, I'll go to a league game and I can't really openly support anybody, and I don't. You just applaud and please, and you're happy to see people. I think I'll be very poker-faced on both games, Sunday the 17th and Saturday the 23rd, and then it'll probably be Sunday the 24th that I'll be able to be really happy that we've got one team through, but not upset anybody who didn't get through. But it's going to be hard, I think.
Does it show, I mean, we touched on it a moment ago about the strength of the league and how good it is. There's four teams still in with a chance of winning the Premier Division title as well. Getting two teams to this stage in the FA Vars, does that show the strength in depth of the Southern Counties East League this season?
I think so. It's probably been, in previous seasons, it's been quite open about, it's not been an open competition. So generally early on, teams have, you look who's going to win and it looks like they're going to get there, and that's what they do. Whereas I think at the moment, there are four teams at the top of the league that are quite tight. They're all keeping to winning their games. They'll have little bits of wobbles, but they're winning their games. I do think, though, that we're it feels like we're stronger than ever, that there are more teams up there, whereas in the past it's just been the one or the two, whereas actually we've got four, five and even six, really, that are just, they're strong and they're up there. They're not giving up. They, you know, it feels numerically that it's Corinthians to lose at the moment, but actually none of the other teams chasing them are giving up. They're actually doing what they need to do and win their games and put points on the board. So that keeps that constant pressure on Corinthian.
We touched on Tunbridge Wells as well early in the conversation. Obviously, they had great achievement in 2013 when they got to the final and just missed out on lifting the trophy. What have you made of the legacy, almost, for want of a better word, at Tunbridge Wells? Because it did seem to put them on the map and increase their crowds. I mean, it was quite a bit of an upturn after the Vars. They did benefit a lot from it, didn't they?
They did. I think they actually, their committee and their management structure were a credit to Tunbridge Wells and the league indirectly, but they worked really hard to get the town behind them, get their support. I think they even opened a shop that sold scarves, T-shirts, etc. And just, A, made money for themselves, but also got their name. They did that themselves. They got their name on the map. They got their support around them. And I think that legacy is still there. They hit a bit of a rocky patch last season, at the beginning of this season, where they've not had such good wins and results in the league, but that's starting to pick up again and turn around. And I think they have held on to a lot of that support, and that's, I think, what will help keep them going financially.
Do you think Cray Valley and or Canterbury can expect a similar spin-off for, you know, from their Vars run? Particularly, I guess, the team, whoever does get through to the final as well.
Canterbury are probably better situated, and by that I mean they're in a city. They're a city team as a town team, whereas Cray Valley are one of many suburban teams that are vying for that spectator and vying for people. What it may do is attract. So Canterbury are also fighting to get their own ground at the moment, which is interesting times for them. And I think this Vars run has certainly put them on the map with Canterbury City Council. And I think what they're doing in the next steps are trying to do what Charlton did in the past, is put local council people into local council positions to get to increase that support. So I think that will help them enormously and will benefit from that. Even if they don't go further than the semi-final, I think that's helped them and will get them there. Cray Valley is probably a harder job to do, but there's certainly posters are out there already. You see them in the local community, local shops, local pubs, etc. So I think and everybody's letting everybody know who they know, even from, you know, people. So they're older players who, when they were playing in the county league, all of those people are making those connections back. So that might bring people back to the club. I think it's harder, as I said, from a local community point of view, because there is other competition for football clubs. You have other Southern Counties East Football League clubs, but with Bromley you have the Bromley FC, you have Welling, so they're all within that 2-3-4 mile radius, which makes it much harder than for Canterbury City, I think.
Obviously the FA Vars is a competition that started back in September, I guess, for virtually all of your teams in Southern Counties East as well. I mean, to get to this far is quite an achievement, but most teams really tend to only think, you know, getting to Wembley once in a lifetime. You know, you've mentioned only two have been so far, but whatever happens, you're going to be, what, a second trip to Wembley within 5 years. I mean, talk about players, you know, that once in a lifetime dream, but for a league official to go and see one of your teams twice in 5 years or so, or 6 years, is quite going to be something quite special once you get round to the final.
Yeah, it will be. Actually, I went to the Deal final too. I was actually still, I think I was only just a management committee, like a club representative. I think it was secretary of Greenwich Borough, still involved with Greenwich Borough at that time. So I went when Deal won at the Old Wembley. It was the last game at the Old Wembley. So then I didn't really know people, didn't know so much about league structure or anything. I think with Tunbridge Wells to go, it was so exciting. This time, I think it's just the third time and at the new Wembley, and it would just be brilliant. I think from... I'm fortunate I get to go to the final because of the league do get tickets to go to the final. So I do get to go to the Vars and Trophy final as it stands. But to go there and have a team that you can support is the best. I don't think you can beat it. And I know I've never played football, but this bit of it is wonderful, really wonderful.
And I guess the other thing as well, Canterbury and Cray Valley, they're probably two not quite so fashionable clubs, if you want, in the league as well. It must be an inspiration, presumably, for every other team, particularly those in the Southern Counties East, when they get round to next season's FA Vars competition, to see how far they can go as well.
I think it will be. And I think it will make next season's Vars competition so much more exciting for the member clubs. And I think, you know, when you've got the Step 6 clubs that are going into it, they love the fact that they're in a national competition. I think if you think back to 2011 when we formed Step 6, you would never have dreamt that we'd have had so many clubs in that competition. And you certainly would never have, even though Tunbridge Wells went the 2 years later, you still wouldn't have thought that we would have been this close again. I know the Northern League have seemed to get teams there year in, year out, but their strength and depth of football has been incredible, really, because of them not having any competitive step four football in that area. And I think that because of the restructures that have happened above us, I think that might be starting to tell on that league now, the fact that they've nobody in the semi-final. For the southerners that don't know the northern geography, Northwich Victoria is from the northwest, not the northeast. Actually, for the rest of the leagues at this level, we shouldn't say it, but it's great that we've got that now, that we've got stronger teams coming from the south, the northwest, and south, Chertsey, Canterbury and Cray Valley, and then Northwich Victoria. It's probably a long time since there's only been one northern team in the semi-finals.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast, FA Vars Special.
That's the league perspective then. Interesting how the restructuring of the football pyramid in recent seasons might have evened out the playing field for teams in the south of the country in the FA Vars. Obviously, Denise saying there, you know, three teams from the south are through to the last four this year. It's not traditionally, but it's normally been a competition dominated by teams from the north.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. You look at the last decade or so, probably, and it has been those Northern League sides doing very well, getting to Vars finals and winning them, Whitley Bay, North Shields, South Shields. If you look at who Tunbridge Wells played in the 2013 final, Spennymoor, and they've absolutely rocketed up the pyramid. They've been promoted three times since then, and they're now knocking on the door of promotion to the National League. So it shows how well Tunbridge Wells did on the day to hold them to 2-1. But speaking to a few managers across the Southern Counties East League this season, the common theme has been what a strong division it is this year, and there's no greater proof of that than for two of our teams to have reached the semi-finals of the Vars. The first time it's ever happened, and culminating in this fantastic tie where they're going head-to-head.
Yeah, let's hope it's a sign of things to come in this competition for years ahead. Final thoughts then, Steve? I mean, it's the two games, you've got the potential of two legs where, the game might not be won or lost on the first game, and then, how do you play it? I thought that was quite interesting what Kevin Watson was saying. Tactically, they've got a second tie, and obviously Ben Smith's never been in this situation before, so they're both managers are going slightly into the unknown, but your final thoughts going into these two matches?
Well, I'll say it again, Cray Valley are the clear favourites on paper. You look at their league position, also the fact that they've scored 85 goals in the league already, the top scorers in Southern Counties East, so you certainly expect them to create a lot of chances across the two games. It might come down to how clinical they are in front of goal, but they are going to put Canterbury under pressure. But yeah, the two-legged tie, I really like these ties over two legs, whether having watched them in the playoffs or semi-finals previously, it's just a different dynamic. I think if you can get on top in the first leg, maybe get one or two goals in front, you know that if you really put the hammer down and go and get four or five goals, you can go and kill the tie. So if one side gets on top, I think they'll really go for it. However, Canterbury's squad, as both managers alluded to, is stronger now than it was at the start of the season and the start of this Vars run. And may well be that they'd be higher up the league if they'd had some of those players from the start of the season. You look at the likes of Phil Starkey and Luke Wheatley, who they were able to bring in just before that quarter-final against Biggleswade, and that gave them such a massive boost, that extra little bit of quality experience on the big occasion. And they've now got a genuine match winner in Dean Grant, who wasn't there at the start of the season. So I think it might be closer than some people expect. And that word you use, tactics, I think it will be a real tactical battle, given how well the two teams know each other and how much the two managers know about the opposition. I think if one of them can keep a little bit of a surprise up their sleeve on the day and maybe do something that the opposition aren't expecting, then that could be the key. Otherwise, we could be looking at a really tight couple of games.
Well, we'll stay impartial. We'll wish both teams the very best of luck, and also thank both teams for their cooperation in putting this podcast together. We really enjoy going out and seeing both clubs and the way they've prepared for this match matches, and wish them both well over the two legs. And we look forward to seeing who gets through to Wembley. The first leg takes place at Cray Valley's Badgers Ground on Sunday, March the 17th, with the second leg hosted by Canterbury, which is at Faversham Saunders Lane on Saturday, March the 23rd. Don't forget, we'll have plenty of previews on our website this week, plus reports and reaction from both ties at kentonline.co.uk.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.